Well, hello, friends. Before we start, Titus O'Reilly here. And if you haven't already heard, we have a membership program, Bazaar Plus, where if you want even more from Sports Bazaar, you can get it. As a member, you'll get a weekly bonus podcast of Mick and I talking absolute nonsense. It's a lot of fun. You get access to all the past bonus episodes too. So there are plenty there. So if you've missed out on them and you want to hear them, becoming a member means you get access to all of that. You get behind the scenes access. We've got a fortnightly newsletter that goes out to members that I write every fortnight with all sorts of information in it. You get access to the members only chat room where we have lots of fun on there, lots of behind the scenes stuff. You can vote on future episodes and you get early access to any live shows that myself is doing or Sports Bazaar live podcasts that are coming up this year. So tons of reasons. We'd love to have you as a member. Bazaar Plus, and the link is in the show notes.
It's Sports Bazaar.
Get into it.
Some of these stories you would say that cannot be true.
I'm fine to us.
The hunt for the weirdest.
This is madness.
It's a masterclass in how not to do things.
The most hairbrained scheme I've ever heard.
Strangest.
Oh, wow. You can't make this up.
Things are only going to get more bonkers.
Most unbelievable.
The most genius thing I've ever heard. You say evil. I say brilliant.
Stories to ever occur.
An unparalleled array of deadbeats.
A mecca for colourful characters.
In the world of sport.
Had a taste for testicle soup.
Can I just stop you for a second?
Don't act like you've never done this.
Sports Bazaar.
Opened his mouth and a sparrow flew out. Slept face down with a compass to make sure that his head was pointing north. He hit so many sixes into the members that they retreat him to the bar.
I'd better lie down after that.
It's time for the leaders of the hunt.
It's 10 cent beer night at the ball bar.
It's Titus O'Reilly and Mick Malloy.
Welcome, everybody, to the latest episode of Sports Bazaar with me, Mick Malloy, and, of course, Titus O'Reilly, doing all the heavy lifting. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. It's been a while since we recorded our last episode.
It has. Happened in that? Because you were off 1 week. You were unwell.
I had COVID.
Was it COVID?
It was COVID, mate.
I just assumed it was gout again. I love how that's the one you always say if I would ask. You just say gout, but I love the old-timey diseases.
Oh, yeah.
Like pleurisy? It's just they're all in consumption.
Anything that needs cod liver oil,
yeah.
I reckon, is a good old man disease.
I remember I had pleurisy once, which is like fluid on the lung, and I was like, the doctor told me, and I was like, what is this, the 1850s? Have I been working in a mine?
You've just dodged the plague.
Yeah. So you were off. And then before that, we had Gather Round, which for those that don't know is when the AFL is all in the one spot.
That's where I reckon I got COVID.
Well, you as a man of the people was out.
I was out mixing. Doing selfies with.
A lot of selfies.
Right. I reckon it was 800 selfies in a day is probably.
It was great fun though, wasn't it?
Oh, man, it's a super sports carnival.
Yeah.
And Adelaide is the perfect size for a festival. We know that through the Comedy Festival, the Fringe Festival.
Yeah.
But you can overtake that town. It's the right population for the circus to come to town and own the joint, and it was bloody good fun.
And they love a drink. And can I say, we got a lot of love from people about the podcast. So,
what'd you hear?
People just coming up and going, just telling me how much they like it.
What did they say
and
about me? Overprepared?
They said that they worried.
Tell him to dial it down.
They said, how can Mick keep up this pace? They said, is he going to be all right? I said, look.
Did you run into any of our members?
Ran into some of the Bizarros, of the members.
The Bizarros, they've been treated right royally.
We just did an episode for the Bizarro, Sarah and I, the producer. While you were off, we did a bonus ep where it was just me talking about how I do all the research. And I got a lot of people writing in going, don't pretend you do it. We all know it's Mick.
Exactly.
So people see through it. They see through
Sarah,
it.
Sarah, that little Jezebel. It didn't take her long to jump in and fill the boots.
Now, before we get, I'll catch you up on where we are with Wimbledon, gang.
This is going bonkers, by the way, and people are loving it.
Yeah, well, this is
but it's been a while, so you're going to have to bring me
we're
back.
We're bringing up to speed. But also, I just wanted to say before we do that, I've got three shows coming up in Melbourne.
Okay.
Because where would it be this show without us promoting ourselves?
What about our live show? It was fantastic.
Well, we did two of them. We're still looking
at doing that again.
Yeah, we are. I like how you always say this to me.
Well, have we got any plans for that? You're off doing your own little side hustle.
Well, as I wait.
What about me?
What about you?
What about my needs?
I know. We do need to help you out. Well, we're getting on it. We are.
What's your show?
Well, so people are saying bring the Sports Bazaar
interstate
from, like, you know, around the country. And we
it's
are going to do that.
Outrageous success, by the way.
Outrageous. Well, we had a great time, those two shows. Yeah. And we even gave that young up-and-coming comedian, as you described him, a bit of a leg up in Sam Pang.
He came and joined us for one.
He came and joined us for half of one of them. And so keep an eye out for him too. I think he's going to go somewhere. But my show is Sport, the Unauthorised History. I did five in Melbourne already and they all sold out.
It was an extraordinary success.
But I'm back 3rd of May, 10th of May, 11th of May at the Leadbeater Hotel. I think they're all about a bit over half sold already. So if and the first five sold out. So
you're not going to knock yourself out, are you? It's a leisurely pace for you. What is it, one show a week and it's...
Have a lie down. Yeah. And then so OzTix, I'll put the link in the show notes, but if you want to come, get on board. We're out of ball doing it. So it's the history of a total sport. So
can I come?
Nah. I prefer if you didn't.
Can you put my name on the door?
Oh,
like,
geez.
I don't want to buy a ticket, but can I...
Gee, really?
But is it the Leadbeater?
Leadbeater Hotel.
Well, I'm just going to turn up early.
Oh, no.
And then be in the room. So
yeah, yeah. You just get in.
You know what I'm going to do? Set up a merch stand. Sell like Titus hats. Titus. Illegal merch.
Like those guys at a concert. After a concert, you see those guys with those fake T-shirts on the footpath. You're that guy.
Yep.
And I'd love that, and I know I'd made it. Mm-hmm. So anyway, come along.
Is there Q&A?
No.
Well, there will be.
With you.
I'll be there with my hand.
It will be like Q&A because I'll be saying, I'll take that as more a statement than a question, Mick. Now, we better get on with the actual show. My fault. I'm taking
people are really enjoying this. I'm getting hassled about this next episode. The people want to hear it.
Here it is. So, well, let's catch everyone up. So where we're at, the Crazy Gang, Wimbledon FC, they've come up from being a semi-professional league. In about 8 years, they've come all the way up to the Premier League. All the time, total anarchists.
So the phrase
antics
I'm going to use is they're a bit loosey-goosey.
They're very loosey-goosey.
Is that fair?
Yeah, I would say.
They love a good time off the pitch.
Yeah.
They're a good bunch. They knit well.
They're intense on the pitch. Oh, yeah. Like, they do a lot. And where we got up to in the last episode is they'd made the Premier League, or what was First Division back then, but they'd reached the top of the pinnacle of English football.
With a brand of football too.
With a tough, hard, they'd kick the ball long. Bomb it long. Intense. Hard tackling.
Which befuddled the pundits too, didn't they?
Yeah, they all thought,
said you can't do this.
They didn't think it was artistry enough. They thought these were a bunch of journeyman plotters but had shown up every other club, right? But they've played their first season in what is now the Premier League in the top level. Yeah. They have finished sixth, which people just couldn't believe, and they got to the quarterfinals of the FA Cup.
Unbelievable.
Vinnie Jones, who
Vinnie
we talked
Jones,
about.
The head honcho. Who you said is credited. Most people think he started it, but in fact came in on the tail end.
Yeah, Vinnie Jones is Vinnie Jones is the guy that, you know, is now a famous actor, a lock, stock, and
Guy Ritchie films.
Yeah, a lot of Guy Ritchie films and stuff. And people see him as the leader of the Crazy Gang if they don't know the story well, but really he's a product.
Yeah.
Wally Downs, who we talked about, and, you know, if you haven't listened to the earlier episodes, was the guy really, his crazy energy and Bassett, the coach.
Yeah.
These were the guys that were really started.
I'm enjoying
it.
The photograph of him squeezing the nuts
of Gazza.
Gazza.
Yeah.
What a moment.
Yeah. And taking out the little mascot, the kid mascot who's for five.
That's right. He's taking him out from behind.
Pre match, he took out one of the kid mascots because the kid was scoring goals against their goalkeeper.
That's commitment.
That's commitment. So where we've got to is they've played their first season. Vinnie Jones is on board. They're all on board. And now it's whether they can actually stay up at the top level, basically, is where we're at the moment. So we're going to pick it up.
Ominous.
Well, no, this is where, you know, they've got there. Everyone predicted they would fall out straight away, but they finished sixth. And they're starting to sign and bring new people on board as well. And you'll see, even though they're at the top level of sport, they've not changed their off-the-field antics.
I love that.
So Dennis Wise is a striker that they had recruited. Now, once again, he'd been released by Southampton, and Queen Park Rangers and Crystal Palace had all said they don't want him. He was just 18, but he was 5'6". They said he's not tall enough or big enough to be a striker. But Bassett, the manager, identifies that he becomes very good at identifying these people
that
no one else wants.
Yeah.
And going, this is the
like
guy.
The pot for the dirty dozen.
Yeah, it is.
I'm going to get together. The...
Yeah, this is the dregs, the people no one wants, but they are, we're going to get them. Now, Wise joins, to give you an idea of how good, he becomes a huge star at Wimbledon and is eventually sold to Chelsea for £1.6 million, which at the time was a lot of money, and he ended up playing for England 21 times. So this is a guy they picked up off the scrap heap as an 18-year-old. Now, his 21st birthday at Wimbledon is
quite a fair.
Pure crazy game. So it's in a hall in Notting Hill after an away game. There's a curfew. The caretaker comes in and Dennis has a chat and says, could we have an extra half hour? Because I think they've got it till like, you know, midnight. You know, like often the 21st.
You're negotiating on the run.
On the run. But you know, often it's like we've got it here, then you either go somewhere else or something. But they're all having a ball. It's all the Wimbledon players are there. That half hour goes by and it's only getting bigger, the party. Yeah, more people are coming, right?
So can I just ask, is the curfew club imposed or is it venue imposed?
Venue imposed. Okay. Because he's hired this club for his 21st, this hall. Yeah. It's a hall, like community hall, you know. So like a lot of people, you have a 21st somewhere and the venue says, you know, as long as you're out by 12. Yeah. So they're going, they've got an extra half hour. Then they say, can we have another hour? The caretaker says, no way.
Yeah.
The players bribe him with 50 quid. They say, here's 50 quid.
Yeah.
Let us stay an extra hour. The caretaker takes the money and says, okay.
All right.
Now the party starts to go absolutely off. It's like 1 in the morning. It's going off. And the minute the hour, bang on the hour being over, the caretaker's straight back over.
Yeah.
And he's like, right, we've got a thing or pay me more money. And they're starting to get a bit annoyed because they're like, we've paid you. We've bribed you already. We've asked nicely.
Deal's a deal.
But the caretaker's like that. So they say, well, could we just go into the storeroom so we can hear you a little better?
Oh, boy.
So they take the caretaker in and they sit him down and then they sit him in a chair and then someone spots some gaffer tape and they gaffer tape the caretaker to the chair.
There you go.
Shut the storeroom door and continue the party.
He had that coming.
That
was bound to happen.
So they get away with this, right? This is the sort of stuff they're doing. So these are like the top tier soccer thing now. This is no longer they're in the lower divisions, right? Yeah. They're still doing this.
Sports stars.
So after they've gone through all the leagues, they're in the top league and they've gotten the first season there and they've finished sixth and they've done incredibly well. Their coach Bassett decides it's time for him to leave. You remember him and Hammerman, who's the owner, who's just as crazy as the rest of them. They're not getting along. So Sam Hammerman is saying, I've had enough of this.
Jesus, on what basis? Like
Bassett says, I was forced out by Sam Hammerman, who felt that he was not getting enough credit for Wimbledon doing so well. He wanted the fans to acknowledge him and for him to be the hero. That was not the case. Mm. Now others are saying, well, Bassett was more like he'd been there a long time. He was a bit burnt out. He had other options and things like that.
Jeez.
Bassett decides to leave.
But he's broke. You know what I mean?
He's the guy's led them from – you know, Division Four right to the top. Huge. Identified their play style, all the players, brought in Vinnie Jones, brought in all these top players, right? Bassett comes home one day after announcing he's leaving and finds Elton John sitting in his lounge room.
What? That old one?
Yeah. So he comes home and there's Elton John sitting there and Elton begs him to come coach his team, Watford.
Watford.
Remember Elton John, which is probably an episode in itself
down
the track, right? Bassett agrees. He says, okay, I'll
come. Is this before he's decided to leave?
He has, but it hasn't been announced.
Right. So, but Elton's got wind of it.
Elton's got wind of it and got him on. So he goes over to Watford and Watford doesn't really work out for him or Elton, but that's another episode. But Bassett agreed. But Bassett hasn't told the players yet that he's leaving. So the night before his final game with Wimbledon, they're at a hotel in Sheffield. And the night before, Bassett says to the players, go out, enjoy the night on the town, do whatever you want to do. As long as you don't have major hangovers tomorrow or I'll fine you, you can go out.
Okay.
That instantly makes the players go, what's going on?
Yeah.
They figure out his leaving. Something's up. So Bassett goes out with a few other people that night and the boys are out on the town, he thinks, you know. He gets back to the hotel at 1 in the morning and Bassett says to the duty manager of the hotel, has there been any trouble? And the junior manager goes, no. And he goes, oh, why are they all behaving? Are they? He goes, no, they're not back yet. Right. So he goes, oh, okay, no worries. So Bassett goes into the lift to go up to his hotel room, one in the morning. And the doors open, and inside the lift was every item from his hotel room, from the bed to his clothes, the sheets. They've packed everything into the – there's the TV set, everything. After years of him boasting that never got him in any of their pranks,
yes.
here they have. They've laid out all his stuff.
Hilarious.
So he decides to leave, and he's off. So they're thinking about who are they going to get to come in and manage the crazy gang.
Yes, well.
This is in 1987, and they're about to go into their second year at the top. And Bassett's replacement is announced by a guy called Bobby Gould and an assistant manager, Don Howe. Don Howe had coached England and was very well respected and liked. Mm. Bobby Gould had actually played for Wimbledon back in 1981 when the crazy gang were just getting started.
Right.
So he was a
bit... He's handy to have involved.
Yeah. David Bassett had taken him on originally. So he had been hired by Bassett back in the day. And the players hadn't let him in the dressing room because the players thought he was a spy for Bassett. This was back when he was playing. So they just didn't let him come
in. He was wearing a wire.
Yeah, they just didn't let him come in the change room for like the first few weeks he was at the club, even though he was another player. They also, apart from the suspicion, they thought he was a spy for Bassett. For the then. They also didn't like his suntan, which earned him the nickname the Moroccan Mole.
Because it incorporates spying. He's a mole and his suntan.
And his
suntan. So he's the Moroccan Mole.
Yeah.
Oh, this is great.
They do good nicknames in this.
They're highly suspicious.
They're borderline paranoid. They are. Gould, though, when he comes back as manager, he knew that despite the hijinks and the nonsense, they were actually very professional in a footballing sense. So he comes in and he knew how they'd been built. So he didn't want to come in and be a manager. He's like, let's change everything.
Yeah.
But he did arrive and he sat the players down and he was about to do a presentation of how he wanted them to play. And there's a few tweaks he wanted, stuff like any new manager. And one of the players said to him, stop right there. Sit down, Gouldie. Sit down, Don. The new manager. This is how we play, and we've had a lot of success. We ain't changing for no one. Then one of the other players wrote the number 172 on the whiteboard and said, do you know what that means? And Gould says no. Said, this is the amount of time we need to get the ball into the attacking third. Then they wrote 44 on the board and said, this is the amount of time our wingers need to get crosses into our strikers. If they don't, they are back in on Sunday for extra training. We aren't changing and don't think you can make us. Don, you might have coached England, but the only person changing here is you.
Are we clear?
So they were that focused and locked in on everything right there. Gould says that this was always a lot of psychology in managing the group, right? So he's come in as a bit of an outsider. Fashionau, the striker who no one really liked that much, he was always late. He always used to say a different bridge over the Thames was shut every single day. What Gould did is he left a blank check, just got him to fill out the amount of the fines later on. this is your check to fill out there your fines. Gould also said, I wanted a striker. So he wanted to hire a new striker, right? And he looked at Ian Wright and a bunch of others and he decided a guy called Terry Gibson was the answer to play up front with Fashionau. And Gould met with the owner, Hammerman, and said they were at this exclusive London Lebanese restaurant. I remember he's Lebanese, the owner. And he said, I want to get Terry Gibson. The only problem is Man United want £250,000 for him. Now, remember, Wimbledon don't spend a lot of money, right? And Gould said, can I have the money? And Hammerman said, if you eat whatever I order... you can have the player, right?
Wow.
At that point, the waiter comes out and presents 12 sheep's testicles. Remember, he's got to think about this and
got to suck it up. You got to eat those.
Yeah. So Gould said he soaked them in vinegar, ate them all, and signed Terry Gibson the next day for £250,000.
Is that the transfer fee, really, isn't
it?
12 test sheep's
12
testicles.
Sheep's testicles.
He's been signed for 12 testicles.
Yeah, exactly.
How many of you can say that?
So with Gould now in charge, the team, they didn't miss a beat because basically they weren't changing.
Yeah.
Right. You know, they decided that was so they
so they're still highly competitive.
Highly competitive. They finished in seventh place. So sixth the year before, but seventh again. And remember, they've like, you know, in the like 8 years before, they were like basically semi-professional team. Now they're finishing in the top sort of six or seven in the Premier League. Even more amazingly is the team had gone on a massive FA Cup run.
Yeah.
This is the 1988 FA Cup. So they've finished seventh in the league, but they've gone on a run. They've beaten West Brom, Mansfield, Newcastle, Watford and Luton, and it set up an FA Cup final against Liverpool.
Dear, dear.
Now, Liverpool at this point in 1988 are the best team in English football by a mile. They have just wrapped up their 17th league title, their fifth win in seven seasons. Their players, they got John Aldridge, John Barnes, Alan Hansen, Bruce Grobler, who ends up being an interesting character himself.
Yes, indeed.
Steve McMahon, Craig Johnston, the Aussie.
Yeah, Aussie.
Yeah. Their player manager was Kenny Dalglish. So, you know, huge, amazing
big guns on deck. This is a proper Liverpool
side. Proper Liverpool side. And they're looking to do their second domestic double, win the league and the FA Cup in just 3 years.
Enough of that.
And they are up against Wimbledon, who had been in Division 4 just 5 years before.
Yes.
So it's very much the skillful, rich, exciting, loved by the
haves
critics.
And livers.
And then there's Wimbledon with
Vinnie's downstairs.
It is totally what it is. And so, you know, Wimbledon are these scrappy, violent kind of taping caretakers to chairs guys. And so in the lead-up, to give you an idea, Craig Johnston wrote the team's FA Cup campaign song, the Anfield Rap. And just to show you how popular, it reached number 12 in the charts, despite being horrendous to listen to.
Sure.
Wimbledon, they had two songs out for the FA Cup campaign because of confusion over who owned the rights. And neither charted at all. So that's the difference, even off the charts.
Yeah.
Wimbledon are this, you know. So Liverpool are tipped to win the FA Cup final easily. A score of at least 4-0 would be predicted by a lot of people.
Sure.
Like, going to be a walkover, right? And also, Liverpool are totally used to playing in a game like this. Like I said, this is their chance to go to Wembley.
The office for Liverpool.
And so, meanwhile, Gould, the manager for Wimbledon, he knew that most of his players had never even been to Wembley, even as spectators. So he actually bribed the groundsman before the game to go in and take them through Wembley.
Wow.
So that's the difference, right? You've got Liverpool who pretty much live at Wembley.
And some tourists.
And some tourists who have to bribe to get in. The thing is, everyone thought Wimbledon would be a bit overawed by the whole thing. Vinnie Jones in the lead-up in an interview says that at Wembley he was going to rip Dalglish's ear off and spit in the hole.
That's some good trash talk.
So they're not exactly playing up to the we're overawed by the situation, right? Now, the other thing is in two league meetings that season against Liverpool, Wimbledon had lost 2-1 at Anfield and then drawn at Plough Lane, their home. So they hadn't been belted in an FA Cup by them. So the night before the game, they all get there and they're staying at Cannizzaro House, which is this very posh hotel, basically.
You're pulling your head in the night before a
FA
Cup final. You've got to.
And they're staying at this incredibly posh.
Go to bed early, boys.
Go to bed early. Vinnie Jones said, we knew this place was so posh. It was too posh for us. We couldn't go around smashing people's rooms up and all that. So it was hard to know what to do with ourselves. So there's
get room service to do it.
Gould said to them, the players are like cats on a tin roof sitting around this really posh place. Mm. So he actually said, gave the players some money and said, go down to the pub and have a few.
Jesus.
So they went to the pub and a bunch of fans recognised them and go, aren't you playing in a final tomorrow?
This is unbelievable. Wimbledon.
So eventually they stay out drinking for a while.
Yeah.
And then, but they don't, they're relatively sensible by
they
their accounts.
They're professionals. But
they head back to the hotel and there's a journalist from the News of the World and he approached Vinnie Jones and Fashanow and asked Fashanow about a woman who'd sold her story to them about an affair he was having.
Oh,
she was having.
Timing's impeccable.
And Vinnie Jones said, is standing there. It's the night before the final. He goes, I went mad at the fella. The best day of our lives, this little weasel was trying to put a knife in our heart. I ended up chasing him up the car park. We go back in. I ran in, got in the lift and went up. Fash is desperately on the phone, big block of a phone. The doors there are about 4 inches thick oak. And if you ever want to know he was the real deal, you should have stood there that day. He hit it with anger. A 4-inch door, he left a dent in the wood. Of course, his world crumbled around him. He was up all night. I said, tomorrow is something for the rest of your life. It may never happen again. Whatever happens now is not going to change tomorrow. You can deal with it then. What we have got to do is make another mark in our life and win this tomorrow. So the Fashionel the night before is outed as having an affair. So he's
great speech. It's like Henry V.
Yeah, and he's like, forget what you've done.
But it's St. Crispin's Day speech, that is. Yeah. That's right up there.
It's not the perfect lead-in. to the game, right?
They've been in tougher scrapes.
So that morning, the players all wake up to another column in the Sunday. This is the morning of the game. The Sunday Times by a guy called Brian Glanville. It's a whole column that says, does anyone like Wimbledon outside their small but loyal support? It's hard to believe. When one has paid tribute to their ability to turn such dross into gold, a major question remains. If they win at Wimbledon, what will it do to English football? So
what
people
a nasty...
are, yeah, people are dead set hate them, right?
That's incredible.
Dennis Wise said he woke up early with terrible nerves, and he and Vinny decide to go down to the town centre. This is like really early in the morning, like 6 a.m. And they decide they're going to buy some flowers for Princess Di, who's presenting the cup.
Of course they do.
And so they wander down really early, like instead of sleeping in, like they've been out drinking the night before. They're up at 6
up
buying flowers for Princess Di. Vinny Jones decides to get a haircut. June Whitfield sees them, and she's an actress who was also the chairperson of Wimbledon Supporters Club. She'd been in heaps of things, but mainly she'd been, so she's a huge Wimbledon fan, but she'd been in the
Carry On films.
The Carry On movies. Yeah, June Whitfield.
Oh my
God. So if anyone remembers the Carry On movies, which were, how do you describe them to a younger generation?
There's a lot of innuendo. Very sort of high camp.
High camp.
And innuendo.
Comedy.
And
how's your father?
And it was a series, Carry On Up the Khyber.
Yeah.
I'll give you a typical scene.
Yeah.
Upper crust, slightly camp man, parachutes, jumps out of plane with parachute, cut to church with spire.
Yeah.
Cut back to upper crust man looking worried, cut back to church spire, cut back to man going, oh, as his anus impales itself on a church spire. There is everything you need
That's
to know.
That's pretty much a carry-on movie, yeah. June Whitfield, yeah.
It was and amazing.
Because the Carry On movies were very that high camp, high British innuendo, everything at a second meeting, a lot of matron, please, that kind of.
Vicar, I've caught you with your pants down. English farce.
Yeah, English farce, I think. And have not, I don't think kind of.
With, what's his name in the front, in the lead role? He's a bit high.
Was it Sid James?
Sid James.
Sid James, yeah. They tried to relaunch them with Julian Clary like in the 90s. And I meant it just didn't
hasn't
work.
Aged well.
The world just moved. Now you couldn't do it. I'd be interested to see if anyone under 30 has watches one now and actually their reaction.
I think it ended that line with Mr. Humphreys. Humphrey!
Yeah. It's all that. So anyway, they bump into her. She was also, as well as being in the Carol movie, she's been in every British TV show you can name, like from Minder to she was also the Jennifer Saunders' mum in Absolutely Fabulous.
Correct.
So she's in heaps of things. So she sees them and she's annoyed at them for being awake so early. They eventually get to the ground. This is Dennis Wise and Vinnie Jones, and they find out they're not allowed to take the flowers in that they've bought for Lady Di.
At least his hair looks good.
So they were all really annoyed about it. Now they get there and it's almost time for the game. And Don Howe, who's their assistant manager, who'd also been England's manager, he had put the clocks back a little bit because he decides, let's keep Liverpool waiting in the tunnel.
So
he just put it back by about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
So the officials are screaming into their dressing room, you have to come out now. And they were just doing a bit of their normal thing. Let them wait. You know, wait. So the game finally starts. And early on, Vinnie Jones tackles Steve McMahon very hard. And a lot is written about this would be a red card. He would have been sent off and they turn a blind eye. I've watched it and I've read a lot of other people. A lot of people say this wouldn't have even been a red card. So a lot's made of this tackle, like typical Wimbledon. Right. But in the thing, it didn't even get a card. It moved
on. Yellow.
Nothing. And even today, I don't think it would be a red. Like, he went in hard, but so much would Liverpool not worry that Steve McMahon, when he got up, elbowed Vinny in the face and cut his face after the tackle. And Vinny later said, I rather admired him for that. So they don't care. They Liverpool, because there's a lot of stories you read online about this FA Cup final where it's all about, like, in the tunnel, Wimbledon were intimidating the Liverpool players and all this sort of stuff. And even like a lot of the Wimbledon players go, these Liverpool players had played Real Madrid and Barcelona. Yeah. They had played everywhere in the world. They'd played us all the time. They were not intimidated. Yeah. This was all a myth. But just if someone's listening to this going, oh, I remember all this stuff happening in the tunnel and all that. There's all these myths that in the tunnel there was like racist abuse from John Fashanu, who was black, to another black player on Liverpool's side, saying racist things to each other. But he said, I said it because we're both black and I can get away with that. But then people have gone back and watched the video because there's none of it. It's all made up in the, so it's one of those historical things that, and I only say that because people will say, oh, didn't all this stuff happen? And people have gone back and looked and gone, none of it happened. It wasn't as spiteful as everyone remembers, including the tackle Vinnie Jones did. But Vinnie Jones did love when he elbowed him in the face. Fashanu, who had been the news of the world story about him having this relationship on the side with this woman, he goes missing for the whole game. So this is their number one striker. Vinnie Jones said later, his mind was elsewhere. We never saw the real Fash that day. We play with 10 men, really. His emotions were like a great big rucksack of concrete on his back that day. But Wimbledon take the lead shortly before half time. There's a looping header. Dennis Wise has a free kick. It goes across and a guy called Laurie Sanchez loops a header in and Wimbledon are up 1-0. And people cannot believe it. So it's half time. It's 1-0. It's been very physical. In the second half, a guy called Peter Bardsley broke through the Wimbledon defence for Liverpool and did a chip over the goalkeeper. But the play's called back from a foul. And a lot of people say it shouldn't have been if you had the VAR now. But the goal's disallowed. Mm. On the hour mark, Liverpool are awarded a penalty shot. Now it's 1-0 Wimbledon winning. So this is going to tie it up. Liverpool's John Aldridge steps up to take the shot. And this is where Wimbledon fooled people a bit, right? Because they're seen as these lads who just don't play seriously. They had apparently watched footage of him, because remember they got invested early on into video footage before everyone else is. Yeah. They had watched hours and hours of Aldridge, every penalty shot he had ever taken.
Yes.
And they noticed he had a habit of taking his penalties to the goalkeeper's left if the goalkeeper just stayed in the middle of the goal, if he didn't move one way. So David Besant, he stays in the middle of the goalkeeper for Wimbledon and dives left based on this and saves the shot. It's the first penalty save in FA Cup history.
There you go.
It's never been done before. And he said later, Vinnie Jones said, we'd watched so many videos, if Dave Besant hadn't gone the right way, I would have killed him. So Liverpool create more chances, but Wimbledon have managed to hold on. The final whistle goes, it's 1-0. They have won the FA Cup and have beaten Liverpool. John Motson, the commentator, famously said, the crazy gang have beaten the culture club. Wimbledon have destroyed Liverpool's dream of the double. It's one of the biggest upsets in the history of the FA Cup.
I love it.
So, I mean, 5 years before they're in Division Four, and now they've won the FA Cup. It's a huge turnaround.
I'm getting the idea that it wasn't that, again, outside of their own fan base, it wasn't that well received. It
feels
Feels like people have subsequently been making excuses for Liverpool, suggested the result was somehow asterisked.
No one was, like, because Wimbledon had small fans, and they were tough and hard. But the thing is, if you go back and read about the 80s soccer in England, every single team had an enforcer. Like, it was more like ice hockey, right? Like, it was like if someone squared you up, you had someone on your team who could square them up, right? Yes. Like, the idea that the rest were all choir boys and Wimbledon were this particularly nasty. There's a lot of snobbish, you're not doing it the right way. You're not playing that 10 passes and a little flick and then a goal. You're just booting it long. getting across and getting a header. But they're like, well, and as we said, they didn't have the players to do that. They couldn't afford those players. So it worked. So after the game, David Besson recalls lifting the trophy, and behind him, Dennis Wise is swearing in happiness at their fans. He's like, Evan, yes, Evan, yes, Evan, yes. And doesn't realize that Princess Anne is standing right behind them.
Right.
There's champagne everywhere. People didn't want to leave. They're all in the after the presentation of the cup. Yeah. Princess Di presents the cup to them.
Yes.
They go into their change rooms. They drink so long, people didn't want to leave that the Wembley staff had to kick them out of their own.
He's 50 quid. Yeah. Can we have an half-hour extension at Wembley?
Where's your caretaker? Could they step into the storage room? So they apparently they get told that they stayed longer in the dressing room than any other winning team, right?
I would hope so.
Sam Hammerman, the owner, goes up to Gould after they've won in the change room while everyone's drinking champagne and celebrating.
Yes.
He goes up to Bobby Gould and says, right, Bobby, they're all for sale. This is our peak and we must make sure we capitalise on all our assets. And Gould said later on that this really annoyed him. They'd just won and here's the owner saying, we've got to start selling these guys off now to make money. And he said it was really annoying. And he said the seeds of the whole club's destruction were sown in that one sentence.
That's incredible response.
Yeah. The players didn't know, though, that this had happened. This was a quiet word between the owner and the manager. So they had been invited to a fancy cabaret club in central London, the players, because they just won the FA Cup. But instead, they decided to go back to Plough Lane, their rundown stadium, where a marquee had been set up, or as they said, we didn't know what a marquee was in the 80s. It was a tent. So they went there instead because they had all their friends going there. So they said the people turning up who are friends of friends, everyone there, June Whitfield shows up and she brings a bunch of friends from the movies and directors, and she brings a bunch of dancers from the Royal Ballet that she's friends with.
What a zoo.
So this party is
the big top. I'm calling it the big top.
Yeah, this party is just, it's got royal ballet dancers. Yeah. It's got everything, right? The night was so big that they run out of beer in Wimbledon. Like the town runs out of beer. I'm not talking like at the tent.
No.
I'm talking like the whole town runs out of beer. Yeah. And they have to put in emergency supply requests to get beer for Sundays for the parade.
Fantastic.
So it's a huge party. It's the highlight of this club that's gone on this roller coaster, right? Now, over the next few years, Wimbledon defy the pundits. They stay in the top level of Division One. They finish around mid-table year after year. They never can quite reach the FA Cup success or get into the top sort of 10 or so teams, but they stay up.
Yeah.
The problem people say is after the FA Cup and the crazy gang moniker is now not just an internal thing but is properly known by everyone.
Yes.
They reckon there's a bit of they have to play up to it too much.
Right.
So Fashanau gets in trouble. He has a clash with a guy called Gary Mabbott, who was the Spur captain, and the aerial challenge where he elbowed him breaks his skull and his eye socket.
Okay, not good.
Not good. Vinnie Jones ended the career of a defender, England defender Gary Stevens, with a brutal tackle. So there's this brutality angle where before they were tough and hard, now because they're seen as the crazy gang. Yeah. David Besson, their goalkeeper who saved it, he was sold immediately to Newcastle United for a lot of money. Vinnie Jones is 1989 sold to Leeds. Yep. 1990 Dennis Wise is sold to Chelsea. So all the key players.
Well, what do you expect?
Well, it's kind of a thing, but people think, you know, if they'd held it together.
That's what I mean. What do you expect them to do or where to post good results if you're selling off
your key bits, right? In 1991, the club had to move out of Plough Lane, their terrible stadium. This was partly on the back of the Hillsborough disaster because all these reports came in and said you got to move away from standing to seating, and Plough Lane was like a relic of an old era. And so they
tinderbox.
So they begin to play home games at Crystal Palace's stadium nearby, which is meant to be a short-term thing, but ends up being for the next 10 years they're playing there, right? So they don't really have a home now. Fashanau gets into their striker, becomes the presenter of television show Gladiators, and gets so into TV, at one point he demands a halftime substitution so he can make the Gladiators filming
Stop
on time.
The club's starting to lose it, right? That is it.
They remained together until 1994, and then he was sold to Aston Villa. In 19, 94, 95, in perhaps what is seen as really the beginning of the end for the club. Their final home game of the 94, 95 season against Nottingham Forest, their owner, Hammerman, decides to parade elephants around the pitch. However, they take so just for entertainment, the animals take so long to go around and then get off the pitch that delays the game, and one of the players is shown a yellow card for the elephants.
Oh, wound the clock back again. Kept the team in the tunnel they parade the elephants.
Yeah, exactly. In 1996, there's even talk that they might move to Ireland, move the whole club from Wimbledon to Ireland, because they don't have a home. They've got a small base. This is looked at. The campaign's backed by Paul McGuinness, who's the manager of U2. But this falls through, but obviously it causes a lot of problem. In 1997, Hammerman sold 80% of his stake for £28 million. Remember, he bought it for about $40,000 for it in 1981.
Yeah.
A huge amount. He also sells Plough Lane to Safeway, the shopping centre mob, for $8 million. So he walks away from Wimbledon making £36 million. In 1997-98 season, there's signs of decline. They're battling in the lower reaches, and by 1999-2000, they find themselves relegated out of the top flight. They'd been up there 14 seasons. In 2004, Wimbledon FC relocate to Milton Keynes and are rebranded as the MK Dons. So you might have heard of them before. Supporters are furious. Their club has effectively died. Even though it's moved, it's effectively died. And supporters decide to form their own club, which is called AFC Wimbledon, not Wimbledon FC.
Yeah.
And most of the fans switch to that. That club has to start at the bottom again. And since then, it's been promoted 6 times in 13 seasons. It's got as high as League One, which is the third division. It's now in League Two at the moment. But they move to Plough Lane, a new stadium in 2020, only 250 yards away from the original Plough Lane, and have basically rebuilt the club through people power. David Bassett, the goalkeeper who saved that famous one, he went on to management success. He took Sheffield United from the third tier to the Premier League in an FA Cup semi-final.
Yep.
Wally Downs, our famous leader, spiritual leader of the, he goes on to manage. He eventually manages AFC Wimbledon, which is seen as a coming home. But that didn't go that well because he was caught putting a few small bets on football and had to be let go, which I think is perfect, right?
Yeah, typical.
Vinnie Jones, though, goes on to great success. Guy Ritchie hires him for the movie Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels. Becomes a huge breakout hit,
he's
of
amazing.
Course. He appears in Snatch. Then in the same year, he's in Gone in 60 Seconds with Nicolas Cage and Angelina Jolie. Vinnie said of his life now, "I've got 3 jets, 4 rollers, a Bentley. But apart from that, it's a bit of a struggle." And that is the story of Wimbledon FC, a club that went from the bottom to the top and to the bottom again.
Someone made a movie about this?
It is truly one of the most bizarre.
That's a Guy Ritchie film. Get Guy Ritchie on.
Yeah, it really is.
It's got enough shenanigans and carry on and elements for him to fuse all that into a beautiful,
and what they did is ridiculous. Like, people, I don't think, get how hard it is to go from the fourth division to winning the FA Cup
window
with most of the same players. Like, they never went out and bought like top players.
There's a bit of Moneyball going on.
It's very much like Moneyball. It's Moneyball well before the Americans.
No one was really on their side. It wasn't like they were gifted anything either, was it? Like,
total opposite. They had no money, no fans, well, not many fans compared to the other clubs, a falling down stadium. And they were picking players off scrap heaps.
It's perfect for. Well,
it's a perfect.
Well done. You've done it again. What a great story. And everyone will be rapt that you've concluded this, because there's people out there wanting to hear.
They were waiting.
Good on you, mate. Well done. Cheers.
If you're interested in more of Mick and I talking complete and utter nonsense, we have the Bizarre Plus members program. If you love Sports Bizarre, this gives you an extra weekly bonus podcast on top of the one you get anyway. You get access to all those previous bonus podcasts as well. You get a newsletter every fortnight. You get access to the chat room. You get the ability to vote on future episodes as well. And importantly, you get early access to any live shows we're doing. You get that before everyone else. If you're interested, the link is in the show notes.